like the days where there was one commander sitting in a room looking at an investigation that was or wasn't done by internal affairs and had no checks and balances on it and made a decision, and that's what we gave to the complainant. It is no longer that is the case. Right now, every IPR investigator investigates a complaint that comes in. We don't just say, oh, this is the person's name and phone number, and we send it over to internal affairs. We do a significant investigation at the front end. We get the complainant's information. We get all of the police reports. We get medical reports if they're necessary. We get witness names. We interview witnesses. We get any photographs. We do a comprehensive investigation to begin with. Then we, as everyone will remind you, although we do have the authority to do an independent investigation, the reality is that IA has the resources and the expertise to do those investigations. So we do send them over to internal affairs, but IPR is involved from the first minute of those investigations. And in fact, we is now a policy at IPR that anyone who's captain or higher, we are involved in investigations. I have sat in, as we all know, there's some high-profile investigations going on right now. I've sat in on those investigations. I've been able to ask questions of those high-ranking officers, as well as other investigations that are of community concern. An investigation cannot be sent to a commander for him or her to make a finding or recommendation for discipline unless me or my assistant director signs off that it's thorough, fair, and impartial. If we do not believe that it is complete, we do not allow that investigation to go for findings. If the Bureau refuses, then we can do our own independent investigation. Beyond that, when the commander makes the recommended findings and recommended discipline, that is not where it stops. It then goes to the assistant chief. He or she makes those same recommended findings. Then it goes to the internal affairs. He or she makes recommended findings, and the IPR director or assistant director, and we make our recommended findings, all independent of each other. If any of the four of us disagree, then on either finding or discipline, which was a huge change in the 2010, then it goes to a police review board, where we also made significant changes to that board. There's a community member now, as there always had been, but the community member now is no longer just chosen by the chief in a vacuum. The auditor does a comprehensive community outreach and then recommends to council for council to appoint that community member. Myself or an assistant director also is a voting member on that board, another significant change. We've also reduced the amount of police bureau members that are on that board. There used to be three assistant chiefs, now there's only one. And beyond that, there now is a public report that details who was at the board, what the majority voted and why, and what the minority voted and why, and gives a recommendation and explains why the recommendations was made. And the chief has also agreed to give some explanation of the times where he or she has not followed that recommendation. So the idea that it's over-deferential to the police bureau, I don't think is entirely accurate. I think that there are two fact-finding bodies that review these investigations thoroughly. And then, if and when the complainant isn't satisfied, then they have a right to appeal to the citizen body. And at that point, it's, have these individuals made a reasonable decision? I think the last thing that the system needs is a third fact-finding body, and then leave it to the council for you all to decide, which is what would ultimately end up happening if you change the standard of review. So that's the first issue on that. But if beyond just the reality of how the system works, I think Mr. Kramer, you know, his testimony actually put it best. They want a new system. They want an independent citizen body to make the decisions. That's the system that they want. In effect, that is a system that would result if we change the standard of review. And to that, I would leave it to Mr. Warbrow to explain the intricacies of that.
The difference between standard of review and preponderance of the evidence.
If you make the proposed change to the standard of review, you would fundamentally change the system that you have. I'm David Wolber with the City Attorney's Office. You would fundamentally change the system that you decided on, council decided on back in 2002. I can speak briefly about the standards and how the decision maker thinks when applying the standards and then try to illustrate how the system would change. In a preponderance of evidence evaluation, the decision maker is trying to decide something about the evidence. It's really an evaluation of the evidence, what it supports. And it's a binary decision. It supports a certain conclusion or it does not.
So it's binary means one or the other?
One or the other. It's either the there's a preponderance of evidence supporting one view, one conclusion, or not. Again, it's a focus on the evidence, not on the decision-making process. When you ask a decision-maker, as you've asked CRC to do these last years, to apply a test of reasonableness, you're asking them to evaluate the behavior of your employee, which is the function that you've created for CRC, essentially. You've had CRC monitor this new system in which you've placed your employees. The decision-maker then determines not whether, and it's quite explicit in the code, whether the decision-maker agrees with the substance of the conclusion, but whether or not the new decision-maker finds that the original decision-maker was within the bounds of reason. There may be a number of reasonable conclusions that spring from a certain body of evidence, whereas with preponderance, you've got the binary situation. What you've done in 2002 is to have, again, CRC determine whether essentially your system is operating within the fog lines. It is a quality, I've heard some testimony earlier about quality control. You put them in a supervisory or quality control oversight position to determine if your decision makers are within the fog lines. If you give CRC a standard of review of preponderance, they will be looking directly at the evidence itself. If you give CRC the ability to bring in new evidence and do investigations, you will have created a new investigating tribunal, which has fact-finding a function in your system. Up to this point, as I said, you've had CRC reviewing how your system is working. Your city employees are working. Your city employees are trying to generate a city action. All of this culminates eventually in a discipline decision by the chief of police, which you have to defend as fair, thorough, and compliant with due process. That is a very difficult thing to do, and a lot of the complexity and resource-intense elements of your system are designed to get to that point so that you can defend your discipline results in grievances and in other forums. If CRC is to do this, you can't simply change the standard of review. You have to essentially bring them inside the city. I know that there is a movement to be independent of the city. The difficulty when the lawyers look at this is that they're generating an investigation and findings that eventually have to become city action. So you would essentially have parallel systems all working to the same end, a city action.
So if I may, Mayor, may I just use a kind of a homey example to make sure we understand what you've just said?
Sure.
So we're all familiar with the difference, or most of us are familiar with the difference between a trial court and an appellate court. A trial court takes evidence, makes findings, reaches a conclusion. The appellate court reviews the record to make sure that the process below was fair and people's rights were generally followed the basic rules. And in some very rare instances, can ask that the trial court do a redo. So right now, listening to the way you've described it, the system we've set up is more like an appellate court. It reviews the findings and makes sure that the process was fair. What we've heard, though, is some testimony saying we'd like it more to be like the trial court. We'd like to be able to have that another bite of the apple where we make the facts. We create the record, and we have some independent staff and counsel to make that happen. That's certainly an honorable position to have. And people are, that is a view that someone can have. But it is a different vision for what has been created. So far, so good?
Yes.
And so when we hear arguments that the standard review is too deferential or not clear, that may be the case. But the change that's proposed, to be fair, would quite fundamentally change the process we have. Now, that may be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not putting a value on it. But I'm just trying to be clear that the standard review change would effectively change the whole game. It isn't just designed to tighten the bolt so it's a little clearer.
It is not an adjustment. It's a fundamental structural change, yes.
Okay, and so fair enough. I mean, that's
Yes, if you want to make the policy choice, it's
that,
there.
That is before us, but it is not. It is not just clarifying the standard so it's easier to apply. It's in essence a different system.
Absolutely.
And what about the? There is a comment from the ACLU that San Francisco and Rochester uses preponderance of the evidence.
And I did some. I looked through Eileen Luna Firebaugh's example, and you know she. I don't recall mentioning them, but I. You know, I could do further investigation on that. But what I will tell you that I am confident that I can tell you is that what we have here in Portland is far there. The CRC's current authority and access to the Bureau's materials and the authority to make decisions and decisions upon open investigation sets them apart. I've been at several national conferences. I do not hear that the standard of review is this national discourse and oversight. That is not something that's not one of the issues that we have discussed any of these panels. So that was actually a surprise to me to hear that that's that part of the national discussion about best practices. But I will tell you that the ability for a citizen body to look at investigations that are ongoing is what sets apart the CRC here in Portland from the majority of the country.
Sets us apart in that we have...
That they have far more authority.
We have far more authority?
Yes. The CRC has far more authority. And I do want to make another comment on this over-deferential standard. The CRC in the last year and a half has sent back, has recommended that the Bureau change their findings, I believe three times, but for sure twice. And in one of those was an incredibly high-profile case, and it was a very significant allegation, and the Bureau accepted it. So it has been done very recently. And can be done, obviously.
So the CRC now and in the proposal can say you should have considered more evidence, go back and think, rethink your conclusion.
Absolutely. I mean, and that is what they do. They review under the standard of review that they have, which is a reasonable person standard, and at least two times in the last year and a half of the appeals that they've had, and they will tell you they haven't had very many. So it was a significant chunk of those that they've had, have sent the case back, recommended to the chief of police that the first time it was Chief Sizer, the second time it was Chief Reese, that the recommendation be changed. And in one very high-profile case, it went from it went to a sustained. And that actually leads me into the conference hearing that was discussed. The conference hearing you asked questions about and how no one in the public has asked for the conference hearing, and CopWatch has said that it's an unnecessary step. I think it's the second one on his blue sheet that I'm looking at. My understanding is that it is correct that what Mr. Handelman said was that it was a creation of Richard Rosenthal, and that the reason was that if the CRC voted to make these changes, to make a change to the recommended findings, that the parties should get together before they just go ahead and launch a hearing in front of City Council based on, you know, your all's time and the involvement it would be to have a City Council hearing to make sure that the parties got back together. So the CRC and the leadership of the Bureau meet in what's called a conference hearing. And they discuss the recommendations, which that happened in this high-profile case that we were talking about, where they discuss whether their reasoning for making the recommendation that the Bureau make the change, and the Bureau discusses their reasoning for why they shouldn't make the change, or they agree with the CRC that they should make the change. So it's a conversation that's had between the two. And it was a construct. There was really no authority for it anywhere. It was something that Richard Rosenthal created. But it has been going on since the beginning. And when it came time to make these changes, I actually did consult with CRC before I wrote it in. I talked to Jamie, to the chair and the vice chair about it. And we had a public meeting on this at the CRC meeting before we started all of this. And Jamie Troy, the chair, said, you know, I talked to Mary Beth about this. I talked to Michael Bigham about this. We've been doing this. This has been the practice. It seems to work. This is what I asked her to do. Did anyone have any objections? And no one objected. So true, in the beginning, no one really asked anyone, but I did before I put it into code. In fact, Jamie, Mr. Troy, the CRC chair, pointed out some areas that I should strengthen what I had originally written, and that's the what you have in front of you. So it wasn't just that I wrote it. He actually collaborated and helped me strengthen it before I gave it to you.
Thank you. One of the things that would be helpful for me before we make a decision is for you to go through all of the testimony, list out what the points were made and what your response is on things like that.
Okay.
So, because I think you...
In writing.
In writing, so that we can all review it. That would be... not right now.
I'm like, okay. I'm going to...
It's very diligent of you to say, yes, I can.
Are there any others
that
you want to have discussion with us verbally before you do that?
I think the one last piece that we should discuss, and I think that goes with what Commissioner Fish was just talking about, how the appellate court versus the trial court. And the criticism of that argument is going to be that while CRC can hear no new evidence, so they're not like an appellate court, they're different. And I think there's a fundamental disagreement about whether or not CRC can hear new evidence. Not between the IPR and the city attorney, which is what's been portrayed. I joked earlier, you know, you get three lawyers in a room, we're all going to maybe agree, but we're going to find different reasons why we agree. So we've all interpreted it maybe differently, but the answer is still the same. We disagree that the CRC can hear new evidence. And again, I will turn that over to the city attorney's office.
No one in the city other than council has subpoena power unless delegated authority, subpoena power by the council.
Well,
there have been delegations to various, right. Through ordinances and code changes whatnot, but it has to be explicitly delegated. And there has, of course, been no explicit delegation of subpoena power to CRC. So I read the code, the CRC code, with that in mind. Unless it's explicitly stated, it doesn't exist. It's also important when people are wondering about some confusion between the two paragraphs about witnesses and compelling witnesses, some difference in language. The thing that ties them together is the purpose of what they're doing, and they are to review investigations, essentially. They have a limited scope of review. There's imposition of the scope of review in the language. Their scope of review is not to... explicitly to investigate further and to add new evidence. Again, what you set up when you look at the entire statutory scheme here, and it's explicit in the purpose of the statutory scheme, is a system in which CRC reviews the performance of other decision makers, of city decision makers. And nowhere have you explicitly stated, and I can't find any evidence that you intended to create this, nowhere did you explicitly state that you wanted an independent investigation capability. Importantly, you didn't give them the tools to do that. You have a question, yes?
Well, I do. I understand that point that you're making, that the CRC doesn't have the authority to subpoena or compel evidence, but they do currently take more comments from witnesses. Is that correct?
It's interesting. In the code, you say that you allow them to take statements from various people. Again, what is the purpose of that? When you look at, as you start to come out from focusing on those small clauses in the code to larger purposes evidenced in the language of the code, you see the purpose of that is to review the investigation. So the purpose that we see in taking statements from the public and in counsel using its subpoena power in its review is to determine whether or not the review was conducted properly, again, whether it was within the fog lines, whether it's competent, whether it was well done, and whether the findings are reasonable given the evidence. Counsel's decision, when counsel finally hears a case, is again to determine whether a reasonable decision maker could have come to the conclusion, could have come to the finding. It is not whether or not the evidence in counsel's mind leads to that same conclusion.
What we're trying to find out is what happened. So if a witness provides a statement to CRC that gives additional evidence, would it not be helpful then for CRC to refer it back to IPR to say, why don't you consider this additional evidence?
Full and possible.
And that's exactly right. So that's the confusion, I think. And that, I think there was a little bit of that confusion at the last hearing. If new evidence does come in or becomes available, we have a perfect example going on right now. There is a case file review that just happened where the CRC reviewed an investigation to determine whether it was complete, thorough, accurate. And at the hearing, there was the civil attorney for the complainant said, I have photographs. Internal Affairs never asked me for these photographs. Mm-hmm. Okay? So the interpretation should not be, okay, we'll hand them over to the nine of you, and we will look at them on our own, and we will make a decision what these photographs mean to this investigation. The decision of CRC at that time is to say, okay, we think that these photographs are material to what we're looking for. We think they should have been part of the investigation, and we are going to vote to recommend that IPR or Internal Affairs conduct further investigation. And specifically, they asked to get those photographs. Now, the danger would be if you just were able to look at these photographs in isolation without doing further investigation. Because unlike a trial court, there are no rules of evidence, there's no confrontation rights, there's no criminal procedures. You need to ensure that there are safeguards to protect the veracity of what you are looking at and to put it into context.
We have plenty of experience with what you're just described because in certain land use hearings,
right,
we don't take new evidence.
Exactly.
But if someone says by way of evidence that there was a fundamental defect in something below and makes a proffer, we'll take that, mm-hmm, and then we have the tool to say, well, we're going to keep the record open or we're going to go back and have that looked at or we're going to give people a chance to respond. But it's still safety valve. It's not trial court.
Exactly.
It's still, you can make a statement in aid of what you believe was the procedural irregularity, but it's not, now I want to tell you a different story of what happened.
And make a different
decision. But if someone does say they have a different story or the photographs, you get to make the judgment, but then you send it back to another body to do the investigation, right?
Exactly.
Can I ask a question on that, though? And I would be concerned with folks that without the rules in place and maybe folks without the expertise that I don't necessarily know the outcomes of that. But do you think that there are unuseful to the charge of being the appellate court? Are witnesses or what is before the CRC unusefully, unnecessarily constrained? Or when you say witness statement, does that mean a written witness statement?
No.
They can come in and do you shut them up? Like we on land use, we're required to deal with folks that come in and go off, despite the state law, go off in a different direction. We have ways to sort of reel that back and make sure that we're keeping everyone's rights and responsibilities sort of balanced. So is it unnecessarily constrained?
In my opinion, no. And in fact, when I first came on to the CRC or to the IPR, and I was at, it took me about a year and a half before there was first an appeal. And the very first appeal I sat through was a person who clearly had mental illness issues. She was, the person was homeless. I mean, the person absolutely did not have support or resources to get through this appeal. And it bothered me. It bothered me tremendously. Captain Famous has said how much it has bothered him. And we spent quite a bit of time in the last year and a half working on making sure that there is a support person available called the Appeals Process Advisor. And in fact, under Mr. Troy's leadership, they have just revised the entire protocol for the APA. And with the Bureau's agreement, now the APA can review the file, just like the CRC members, and actually assist the appellant. The Appeal Process Advisor, thank you, now has access to the file, which they previously did not. They can speak in the hearing, which they previously were not able to do. I know that the changes that the CRC adopted weren't entirely what some members of the community wanted, but they also made some significant changes to the protocol that I think got closer to what members of the community wanted. So we've completely increased the support available. In fact, I've also... there was folks from the National Lawyers Guild that approached me about a year and a half ago, and could have been more now. Time's kind of moving slowly, quickly, depending. But a fair amount of time ago, the National Lawyers Guild approached IPR and asked whether or not we would consider allowing volunteers from the NLG to be advocates for the appellants. I agreed to that. We put it in our letters that you could have support from the NLG or you could have support from an APA. When we weren't getting enough appeals, someone suggested, well, maybe people aren't appealing because they don't feel like they're going to get support. So I moved that information that you would have support to the front end. So as soon as they're advised that they're going to have an appeal, they're told that if you choose to appeal, that there will be support available to you. So I feel like I've really worked hard to make sure, I used to do domestic violence work. I know how hard it was for people who, you know, I walk in this building, I walked in the courthouse every day. And it was normal to me. I talked to judges in the street and the coffee shop. I mean, it was normal. But for most people walking into the courthouse and most people walking into City Hall is an incredibly scary experience. I've talked to you all probably too long tonight and how many other times before. It's comfortable for me. It's not comfortable for a member of the public to go and speak to nine strangers. So I really work to make sure that they have that ability to do so.
So one thing I want to dig into a little deeper is sort of the who and what is allowable or expected and what are the mileposts for the process review. So you've outlined that to me sort of in a process way. I'm actually interested in more substantively. You've helped, and your comments today have helped in terms of folks that might be vulnerable to the machinations mm-hmm. of an institution mm-hmm. and a bureaucracy and maybe not want to pursue the process. But I just would like to know more about what would be considered, where's the line between evidence and process right now in terms of the review at the CRC level?
Well, in my experience with appeals, and granted that the time before I arrived, there was far more appeals than there are now, but my experience with appeals is that, well, the chair runs the appeal, not IPR. We're just there. The chair runs the appeal. The chair allows the community member to speak. The chair will now allow the APA to speak on the community member's part. They allegedly have, I think, a time constraint, but I have... Trust me, we've been there till 10, 11 o'clock at night, and we don't usually enforce it. If they produce information in the discussion of the appeal, one appeal in particular I remember, well, you know, my cousin or my brother, I can't remember, a family member was actually home, and he was actually in a room of the house, but that family member doesn't want to speak to police and didn't speak to police and doesn't want to, but, you know, could provide information for you. So this was presented at the appeal. And so that and a few other items that came up about there being a discrepancy between what the eyewitness saw, whether it was a marked car or a not marked car. We weren't able to verify in the computer record which one it was. So this information came up in the course of the appeal. And so at that point, the CRC voted to send it back for further, to recommend that we conduct further investigation. IPR took on the piece of having the conversation with the family member because they made it clear that they don't want to speak to the police. So we did that as a civilian rather than have IA do it. IA took on the piece of getting the documentation regarding the vehicle.
By the way, in that example, by the way, it occurs to me that that there may be a reason that person doesn't want to talk to the CRC either. And it might actually, the kind of customized outreach that you're capable of doing might actually be more beneficial in terms of getting the evidence than saying, you know, come to a public proceeding.
Right. So am I answering your question? I'm sorry, I feel like
we're running out of time, but maybe I can summarize what I think I understand and you can tell me how accurate it is that an appellant, through whatever point of the process, it can say, present whatever they want.
Yeah, we've received tabbed books. Yes. Sorry.
Right. And that includes all the way up to in front of the citizen review, CRC.
Yes.
The CRC can hear all that, and it's making the point as an appellate body based on that, some of which could be brand new to you, them, police officer sitting in the room, anybody might be new to it, just might have come to them that night, whatever. CRC can take that, determine whether, let's say, new information is compelling to them, and if it is, they can say, this needs to go back through the process, correct?
Yes, they can recommend that. They cannot order IPR or IA to do that, but they can recommend that we do further investigation. Yes, that is one of their explicit findings.
Right. So although they are limited in an appeals function in terms of evidence presented to them why the investigation was bad. They're not limited at any point in the process, which is different than our, which is different in certain types of land use. Mm-hmm. Back to the, those of you that keep track of those things. All right. Are there any other, is there any other discussion from council? So what I'd like from council and the public is to get to us and everyone to continue to give input to my office. Clay Neal is the person that's sort of handling the logistics on this with the public safety team. Additional questions, but also at this point in the process, any suggested changes or amendments. I appreciate Mr. Handelman and the League of offering me some specific changes in wording today. That's very helpful. Appreciate others to do the same.
Mayor, can I just ask a scheduling question?
Yes.
Is it now, is it your intention then to resume this matter sometime in January?
No, it's my intention to have another hearing on 2 o'clock on
December 8th.
On December 8th. I doubt that we will get to any sort of conclusion then, but I would like to at least air out sort of the sense of council and air out, give another opportunity for more conversation with the public.
When will we get your materials, Mary Beth?
Well, one, I want to confirm that you did get my materials on November 22nd about the proposed amendment to that one portion of the code. Okay.
Well, before you answer that question, I have some further requests for
sure.
The information that I want.
Can I just establish when if we're coming back on the 8th?
Uh-huh.
Then we'd have to have materials in responsive to what we're creating a record on by the...
I don't know the rules.
So let me suggest that we will have another hearing on the 8th. That will mark the third hearing. Our expectation is we will not be making a decision at the 8th, but we will continue to air out specific changes that council will vote on in terms of amendments. And we'll take testimony again, and then we will set a date for decision-making based on the 8th and based on sort of where we're at. But it could come as soon as the following week, or it could be set over further out. And just for those of you that don't follow city work, the care that we give this issue is noted in the fact that we are having these multiple hearings. There are very few, only the issues that we feel of the most critical concern and the heightened sensitivity sort of get this kind of airing out. I think it's very important. I appreciate you being part of the process.
Thank you, Mayor. And I appreciate your diligence and willingness to put the time into this and everybody's participation indeed. It is remarkable to me that when we met in March of 2010, the first hearing, everybody said, hurry up and approve this. And three of us said we need a little more time, and that time proved very beneficial into getting to a result that was not appealed and had only one issue going to bargaining. So I think it's really important that we do a similarly diligent process, and I appreciate the mayor being willing to do that. So when you do the memo summarizing what you've heard, what's helpful to me in land use issues, particularly when it's on the Planning Commission, is where staff would go through and list maybe three or four people each asked for the same, mentioned the same concern, but listing that so that everybody knows that their concern or their request was heard, who asked for it, and then what your response to that request is. For instance, several people have said there's 60-some recommendations and we're only doing a very small quantity. I know that was addressed in your first PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. If you could remind me of the response on that and how many, what happened to each of the multiple requests of suggestions from the stakeholder group. That would be one thing. But then another column, I'd like you to confer with HR and give their, and also the city attorney's office, to give me some advice on which of the requests would require bargaining.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you at that point, but I think it's a nuanced, significant argument that I don't know if we could get to the bottom of in short order.
That's obviously not your area of expertise, but with advice from the city attorney and HR, and it's not necessarily a definitive, absolutely yes, absolutely not, okay. But this is a significant issue that would be of concern, and clearly we would want information from the police officers and from the police union as to whether what their opinions are, just so that I have more information on which to make a decision about what can move forward quickly and what maybe needs some more time to flesh out.
Okay. So what happened to the remaining recommendations and the bargaining issues?
Well, everything that's been brought up in these two hearings, I would like to see that in a matrix so that there's a response from IPR.
The difference between land use and this is we don't have the staff for that. But we'll give it our best effort.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've submitted multiple documents that addressed each and every recommendation that has been made by the stakeholders that were made by CRC. So I'm not quite sure.
Well, I don't know if maybe staff in one of the other offices has been able to pull all this together, but it seems like
we'll sit down with you and your staff and review what we have. See what we need to provide you, what's left, how's that? They've actually done a fair amount of that. It's because we're taking a longer period of time, I just want to make sure that everyone has had a chance to review all that. And whatever is left to answer, we will seek to get you an answer.
And there's copies of it for people in the gallery who haven't seen it right over there.
So your original submission included, and we'll take feedback that some things we didn't answer, so we'll take that feedback, but the original submission did include what happened with everything. And so what did we miss, just so I understand?
Well, I just have an increasingly large binder of information that people have requested more.
That's going to continue. We'll do our best to stay on top of it.
Thank you.
I don't know what else to say. I did get Mr. Handelman and our friends at the League to get it down to a total of 4 pages, and it was very useful. It gave concrete language, and so you might not have had a chance to review their stuff today, and so there are some other concrete suggestions out of this hearing, and so I think we can get that back to you.
Yeah, if I could get a written response maybe to Cop Watch and League of Women Voters, that would be helpful.
We can do that.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Thank you all for staying a little longer. We're adjourned for the week. Thank you.